Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
We are talking tech between now and 3 o'clock. Fevzi Turkout, the gadget detective. Good morning, Fevzi. How are you?
Morning, Tom. Yeah, good, thank you.
What's caught your eye over the last few days, tech news-wise?
Well, in terms of tech news, we've got a harmful robot that sparks an AI debate. So the first law of robotics, as we know from Isaac Asimov, is you must not harm a human being. They've developed one that can harm a human being on purpose. So
slightly worrying.
It is worrying, but it raises some interesting questions because the robot can choose to harm us or not. I suppose it's exercising free will to an extent.
We're not talking the sort of T-1000 from the Terminator kind of robot.
Not yet. This one pricks your finger.
Okay, so it's less worrying.
But it's the principle of the thing, you see. They don't want to give one with a laser cannon just yet. But
it's only a matter of time.
It is interesting because, you know, it raises all sorts of questions about, for example, is it possible to program robots in such a way that it's impossible for them to harm human beings, that if they are truly to be intelligent or artificially intelligent, is it possible that they can outgrow their programming or their intended programming? Can you ever be sure that you could develop a robot that could never evolve to harm? Science fiction is rich with examples of this. I remember there was an old film, I think it was called The Forbin Project, where the American defense computer and the Russian, or the Soviet as it was at the time, that it was defense computer, became sentient, and their programming was to protect the human race. But they kind of made the leap that actually to protect the human race, you would actually have to enslave it. And by the way, they had all the nukes under their control. So it just begs this question as we leap headlong into artificial intelligence, is can we ever program them in such a way that will stop them from killing us all, basically?
Yeah, that's a nice thought. Somebody did raise a question I remember not that long ago of automated cars, autonomous cars, self-driving cars, which are, you know, the next big thing in so many ways, is if the car would ever have to make a choice between, and this is fairly unpleasant, between, say, harming a single or a group of pedestrians who might be crossing the road and the car's approaching them by deliberately crashing the car,
yes,
thus harming its occupants, but it would have to make a choice between harming a smaller or a larger group of people.
You
can see that.
How
do
you program, even if it could make that split second decision, which I'm sure in time they can, you know, how do you program that sort of morality? I don't think even human beings would necessarily agree on what should be done. So how could we possibly tell a machine what to do? Or should we not tell it what to do? Should we just give it with the wherewithal to make its own decision?
Well, it's a challenging one, it has to be said. I'm not sure I can give you an answer on that one, Fevzi. But you might be able to give an answer to some of the people who've got in touch with us already on 85058. I'm going to start. I feel like I should do this every time we're on now because it happens every time. Let's start with a Windows 10 upgrade question. We should start a tech phone in drinking game where every time we say Windows 10 upgrade, you have to drink or something.
You mean we weren't meant to be doing that?
Goodness. Hey, okay. Speak for yourself, Fevzi. I'm not allowed to. I'm in a studio. People can see me. There's a webcam. Gordon and Kidderminster has got in touch. He has a Lenovo Windows 8 PC. I don't know if I've pronounced that right. It's Lenovo?
Yeah,
Lenovo?
Perfect, yeah. Lenovo.
Bought ThinkPad, didn't they, from IBM a while ago. Mm-hmm. A Lenovo Windows 8 PC, which has a factory reset facility. He wants to know, if he upgrades to Windows 10, will he lose that function?
He may lose it, and even if he didn't lose it, it would take him back to the original operating system. So the factory reset facility will be, typically the way it's done is that a small section of the hard drive is sectioned off and hidden, and on that partition, as it's known, is a perfect copy of how your computer was at the outset. So it won't have any of the apps. The operating system will be the old one, and it will be the version of it that you had before. That's really the sort of the last resort option. Now, it's possible that you could lose that, because it is possible for a new operating system to overwrite old partitions. It really depends on how it's done. So if you're worried about losing that, what I would say is make a copy of that partition before you do the update. And in fact, you should make a complete copy of everything on your hard drive, not just the restore partition, but everything.
Yeah, it's a trigger. I mean, Windows 10 has a there are... restore tools within Windows 10. I only know this because I accidentally activated one, even though I didn't want to do a restore. I was trying to get access to my my BIOS setup, which seems really hard to do in Windows 10. So God knows what I actually pressed, but it sort of reset the PC into a recovery mode, which seemed to want to reinstall Windows 10. So there is something baked into the OS, isn't there? But it won't necessarily install all the laptop drivers or whatever that you might need specifically for your
no,
PC.
No, it's also worth bearing in mind that if you do upgrade or go to Windows 10, you know, that you do get I hesitate to use the word upgrade. Yeah, no. Well, because actually it's a fine operating system, so but it's not an upgrade good. For everyone. No. For some people, it will brick their machine. So yeah. I'm not saying it will be an upgrade for everyone, but you get a month in theory to roll back to what you had before. And the reason why I say in theory is that it's a major endeavor to roll back to, a previous. It's almost like a previous life, you know, how it was when it was Windows 7 or Windows 8. Usually that will work fine. Occasionally it does not. So if you are upgrading deliberately, and a lot of people are being upgraded without their knowledge, and that's another question. But if you are upgrading deliberately, then you must do a full backup beforehand, assume it will go wrong, assume that the rollback won't work. So, excuse me. So that's what you need to do. By the way, if you want to make sure... or try your best to make sure that you don't get upgraded to Windows 10 against your will, there is a free utility that you can download called Never 10. That's N-E-V-E-R, numeric 10. You can find that from, there's a very well-respected security researcher called Steve Gibson, runs a company in the States called GRC. It's a free little utility that he's written. And at the moment it works, and it does two things. It switches the settings so that despite Microsoft's best endeavors at the moment, it doesn't upgrade to Windows 10. And if Microsoft have downloaded the 6 gigabytes of files onto your system in preparation for Windows 10 that you didn't ask for, it can also delete those for you, thus freeing up the space. Because to a lot of people, 6 gigabytes is a lot of space, particularly if you're on a smaller drive and space is at a premium.
Or on an SSD or something similar. Martin has given us a call, 0500 909 693. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Fevzi.
Good morning, Martin.
What would you like to ask Fevzi, Martin?
Basically, Fevzi, I've got an iPhone 5S at the moment, and later today I will have an iPhone 6S Plus arriving.
Right.
I've backed everything up off the 5S onto the iCloud at the moment.
Yeah.
And I was intended on using the iCloud to transfer everything across. The concern I got, I've got 241 photos on my camera roll, but only 123 appear on the photo stream. Now, if I transfer via iCloud, will it transfer everything on the camera roll as well? Or is that just solely on the device that I've got at the moment?
No, it should in principle take everything across, but my advice to you, Martin, should be to... Do you own a sort of desktop or laptop computer?
Unfortunately, my laptop's broken at the moment, so I haven't got the facility to use that, but...
Look, you know, it should work, but if it was me, I would purloin another machine from somewhere just for the purpose of attaching your old iPhone to that computer. It can be a Windows PC or it can be a Mac. Make sure it's got iTunes running on it and connect it using a cable and let it do a full backup of your iPhone. First of all, that's a much quicker way to restore, by the way, than from the cloud.
Right.
But also it's, if you like, a backup of your backup, particularly because, you know, iCloud is out of your direct control, and things sometimes can and do go wrong with this process. And I think if those photos or in fact anything on your phone is of particular importance to you, it's worth taking that extra step. Now, I know that's a pain. You haven't got a machine working in your position at the moment, but maybe a family member or a trusted friend.
Yeah, I could possibly do that. Yeah.
What you can actually do is once it's done, you can then copy off that backup onto an external drive, or indeed, you know, set it to save it onto an external drive in the first place. It's not going to necessarily need to encumber your friend or relative's machine. But I would say by all means do the iCloud restore.
But in theory, it should transfer it all.
Yes, but I really wouldn't recommend you rely upon that.
Martin, are you when your new phone arrives, later today is it your new phone arrives? Congratulations, new phone day, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
When your new phone arrives, you're keeping your iPhone 5S for a wee bit, yeah? You're not going to get rid of it straight away, so you'll have both phones.
No.
So I wonder, Fevzi, can Martin try the iCloud sort of transfer and then sort of check, and if it hasn't worked, he's still got them on his iPhone 5S? Or does it ship them across wholesale?
He can do that, but again, I'm sorry, I've just seen too many examples of things going wrong. I personally would just get another backup onto a PC or a Windows machine separately. Yes, you're right, you can still try again from the original machine, but it's still better to have something else.
I can get a hold of my son and use his laptop, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea. But by all means, you know, don't wipe the old iPhone either, to you know everything is okay. I just guess I'm at that stage where I don't take anything for granted anymore, and I'll go belt and braces. There are people who say that one backup of something is not a backup at all, and I tend to agree with that. You know, you need backups on different media in different locations. It's good that you have one in the cloud, have one or two scattered around locally, because this is, you know, iPhones or smartphones in general are not just phones anymore. They're so integrated into so many parts of our life that if you were to just take a few minutes to look through what's actually on your smartphone and what it would mean to you to lose that, and quite often it's got data that doesn't exist anywhere else. You know, you don't want to be reliant even on one backup.
Yeah.
There you go, Martin.
I was just listening to the show, and I thought, well, with the timing of that coming, I just thought I'd ask the question.
And also,
thank you for that.
Good luck and enjoy your phone. And, you know, one of the nice things, I think you said you had going for the 6S Plus model, yes? One of the nice things about the 6 Plus and then more recently the 6S Plus is they're the only iPhones that when you turn them in landscape mode, i.e. sideways on, all the icons spin round just like on an iPad. Even with the 6S and the 6, you know, the smaller cousins, as it were.
Yeah.
When you turn them sideways, nothing happens. All the displays still end up. So it's not so useful. So the way that a lot of people use a 6S Plus is like an iPad mini.
Yeah.
So I think
we need new terminology. We've got iPad Pros, iPads, iPad Minis, iPhone Pluses, iPhones. It's confusing.
Well, there's a lot of overlap, and it's quite interesting because a lot of people are saying, "Oh, this wouldn't have happened in Steve Jobs' day. You've got all these confusing ranges." But actually, you know, I quite like choice, but sometimes it can be a bit confusing. People don't know whether they should, you know, go for the Mini, use something like Skype, or whether they really need a smartphone anymore, or whether they should get a basic phone and a tablet. That sort of idea,
or a phablet. I love the word phablet. It's fantastic, Martin.
You know, you hear it less these days because as the screens get bigger and bigger, it's become normal.
Yeah, a phone is a phablet these days, isn't it? I just like saying the word, really.
I agree, it's
phablet.
Great.
It's satisfying. Speaking of satisfying, Martin, I'm very jealous because you get to do one of my favourite things later today. You get to peel off that little bit of sort of semi-translucent plastic that protects the screen on a new... I love that bit. Savour that moment, Martin. That's one of the best times. And it happens every 2 years now. I hope you really enjoy your new phone. Thanks so much for giving us a call. 0500 909 693 is the number Martin called. Give us a ring if you want to talk to Fevzi. Loads of you getting in touch on text. Sort of theme of AI and robots and things that seems to be running through some of the text given our conversation earlier, Fevzi. Alan in Northumberland wants to know if you can still get robo-pets, the sort of things you could get a few years ago. He fancies a robo-dog that you can train. I should remember there was a cat or a dog that Sony
used to do the iBo.
Yeah.
I used to have one of those. And they went through several generations and then they just stopped doing it. And it was one of those things that... It's a shame because, an organisation the size of Sony, you'd think that they could run that as a little pet project, if you'll pardon the expression.
Thank you
so much. but they gave it up, and I don't really know of anything commercially available at the moment. I mean, you've got some stunningly good robots being built in the States now, but not necessarily for home use. I think one of the problems is, you know, you get toys are ever more sophisticated, and iBo was more than a toy, but it wasn't quite enough to maybe justify the high price tag. But, you know, sometimes it's possible for these companies just to run projects that people don't even necessarily buy in large numbers, and they leave them as some sort of beta development project.
Yeah, sort of halo project kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm not aware of anything worthwhile that you can buy at the moment. There are some sort of bipedal robots, you know, the robots that walk on two legs that are around. But I think we're at the lull before the storm, as it were. There's going to be some very interesting stuff that you can buy. And I don't think it's going to be that long before we start getting more sophisticated single-use robots in our home. We already have them in things like robot vacuum cleaners. But by the way, I don't know if you're aware, but you see these robot vacuum cleaners, they're about the sort of size of a large Frisbee, and they sort of scuttle around. You know, the software that's in those is based on minesweeping software, because there's an algorithm in them that's designed to allow it to work out the size and shape of the area and how to then cover it fully and completely, but in the minimum amount
of time.
That makes
sense. It's logical, isn't it?
Yeah, so they use Minesweeper software. It's quite intelligent what they're doing.
The only reason my wife won't let me get one of those, the only reason I wanted one was so that I could sit the cat on it and just have the cat go around the room, which, you know, we've seen videos on the internet.
We have done, yes. You can just go to YouTube for that purpose.
Exactly. I can live vicariously through other people's cat robot vacuum cleaner combos. Tony in Somerset's got in touch. Tony, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Tom. Is it Tom?
It is Tom indeed, Tony.
Yeah,
yes,
good morning,
yes,
Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
It's my pleasure, Tony. Thanks for giving us a call. Go ahead, Fevzy's waiting for your question.
Yeah, good morning, Savvy.
Morning.
Just a simple question. On your home computer, when you log in on Google Search, if you search something, I'll say sale room as an example. Mm-hmm. If you log into the sale room a number of times, it stays in Google Search.
Yes.
So if you were to let somebody or give your computer to somebody else, the history of what you've searched is saved up on the Google screen.
Yeah, yes.
How do you get rid of that?
Okay, there's a number of ways. There are settings that Google provide, but There's a better application called CCleaner, which will do a much more extensive cleanup. Because when you do a search on Google, it's the footprint that you leave behind, i.e. the sort of the evidence of what you've been doing on another computer, isn't just the autofill function. So you can switch off autofill, but there's much more to it than that, because those search results are stored in a temporary form on your computer. They go into temporary internet files, and therefore if someone knew how, they could actually recover the details of your search. So you get a search history that's stored, all sorts of things that are stored that you can delete. But I would recommend use a program called CCleaner. It's from a company called Piriform. It's free. The company is Piriform. It's the letter C followed by the word cleaner. Don't be tempted to or tricked into using the pay-for version. The free version is more than adequate. And this is a cleaner that it's a good idea to run it from time to time. I have it set on my machine so that every time I start up my machine, it just automatically runs CCleaner and cleans up the previous sessions. And that's not just used, Tony, for the purposes of privacy, although it is important for privacy, but also for reasons of security and also to keep the machine nicely spring cleaned. It's not overly aggressive. It doesn't delete stuff that it shouldn't do. I've used it for many years without any problems. And if you just do a search on CCleaner, you will find it, or go to the Piriform website.
Right. So I would search Piriform.
Yep. Search Piriform
and
CCleaner.
Various products. Yeah. And then you just sort of download the CCleaner.
Yeah, and be careful. Have your wits about you as you download. And it's a shame I have to say this, because although the product itself is excellent, one of the ways that they make money is by encouraging you to go for the paid-for version, or, in fact, clicking on one of the myriad of adverts that appear around the download. So just, you know, keep your wits about you and just download the free version of it and nothing else. And if it offers to download anything along with it, like, Chrome or Adobe or something else, just say no. Just stick
and
to what you want.
And you just sort of run that program on your computer, or does it just wipe everything off when you, run it?
It doesn't wipe everything off. What it does, I mean, you can choose what it does, but what it does by default, it will delete, for example, temporary internet files. It will tell you, you know, within this browser, this is what I can delete for you. So it can delete, for example, your browser history automatically. So every, and you can choose whether or not to have it run as you switch on the machine. So if you do that, it will delete your browser history for you if that's what you want. And there's always a balance, Tony, between security and privacy on the one hand and convenience on the other. It's quite convenient to have your browser history up there. It's quite convenient to have it as you type the address of a web page for it to say, oh, well, I know you've been there before, do you mean this, and fill it in for you. It's obviously very convenient, but it's less secure and it's less private, as you say, if anyone else uses it. The other thing to bear in mind is that with Windows, you can set up multiple user accounts on it so that a single machine can be used by different members of a family, for example, or different people within a business, and none of them will see anything pertaining to the use of the other user, because each one has got their own area in which they work and all their own temporary files and preferences and so forth. So that might be another approach, is to just set up an additional user account on the same computer. So you use one user account, so you know, you log in as Tony with your own password, and you know, another family member could log in with their name under a different, using a different password, and never the twain shall meet then.
Tony, thank you so much for giving us a call. 0500 909 693. That was Tony in Somerset. Similar theme, question on the text, 85058. Fevzy, this from Vaughan. Is there a free security app for the iPad? Many, I would have thought, aren't
there? Yeah, I mean, there are many. And you've got to think about, you know, what you want that security app to do. There are antivirus programs that you can run on iPads, and these days it's you know, a good idea to do that. My general feeling about free is that, you know, I quite like free software, but actually security software is one of the areas where I prefer to pay for it, because you get additional functionality and you get better support. So, for example, whilst a piece of security software might be able to identify and try and prevent your device being infected, paid for software, and there are many applications that will do this for you. Norton do a good security suite. ESET do one. Those would be two I would look at anyway. You can get additional functionality. So, for example, some of the paid-for ones maintain a database of websites that are known to be problematic. So when you try and go to one of them, or when a link that you click tries to take you to one of them, before you get there and before you then have to try and deal with a virus infected download or whatever, it would actually stop, it will intercede. But keeping that sort of database up to date is expensive and tends not to be with free software. Equally, although all of these softwares will try and stop an infection getting onto a system, the more sophisticated ones, for example, will allow you to, for example, give it the last few digits of your bank account number or the last few digits of your credit card number, and the system will then keep a watching brief, and if it sees that stream of digits trying to leave your device, it will stop it before it happens. So even though it's possible that a machine that's got, you know, antivirus or security software can still be infected, it's still possible to mitigate the results of that infection by having good security software on there.
Tom Green and Fevzy Turkout taking your tech calls between now and 3 o'clock. Fevzy's website is gadgetdetective.com. And I should tell you as well that this hour is available as a podcast, or will be available as a podcast a wee bit later on if you go online and search for Let's Talk About Tech. If you want to call us, 0500 909 693. If you want to text us, it's 85058. Or you can go via social media at BBC 5 Live as well. Fevzy, Tony, who called us just before the news, talking about Google sort of retaining search information, a couple of people have texted in on that theme, really with the same sort of question. Nick is one of the people who's texted in, another one has no name, asking whether the incognito modes, the sort of private browsing modes that you get on various browsers like Google Chrome and Safari on the Mac, are they safe? Are they totally incognito?
Well, Okay, so it's worth explaining what those are. That doesn't stop Google or anyone else, that any other servers that you're communicating with on the internet, having copies or retaining copies of information regarding your searches and so forth. All that's to do with is trying to delete what's held locally on your machine. So when you close that incognito tab, in theory, it should delete everything. So I think it's perfectly legitimate to use those. I would still use something like CCleaner in addition to that, because because it's belt and braces, and I think you probably know by now I'm a belt and braces kind of guy. But also because CCleaner does a lot more than just deal with sort of privacy issues in terms of keeping the machine running sweetly. It's one of the pieces of software that any new Windows machine is probably one of the first things I'll download onto that machine. It's just a no-brainer. They keep it up to date. We never had a problem with it, never had sort of malware coming through it or anything like that. And it just does a really good job of optimizing your system in a gentle way. Because there are some packages that do that, but they go too far. And then they start knocking off bits of the Windows by accident and destabilizing the machine.
Yeah, it's a risky thing when you start deleting things. I too use CCleaner. It's a great bit of software. One bit of advice I found out to my cost: if you use Sky Go, the service where you can log in and watch Sky programs,
yes,
it only allows you to use a certain number of machines. It's a couple, I think, unless you pay a bit extra, and it's four machines. And what CCleaner does with the default options is it wipes, I don't know if it's a cookie or a browser setting, it kills the cookie, which is fine because you then have to re-log into Sky. But what that then says to Sky is this is a new machine, and you only get to change machine once a month. So if you use Sky Go, just untick the thing
you can do with cookies is you can go through the list of cookies that's currently on your system before deleting it and say, no, I want that one, I want that one, that one. Those cookies are protected. Yeah. So every time you then wipe out all the other cookies, because there are cookies you don't want.
No, like, absolutely. Add tracking called, and things.
So, yeah, exactly. So a cookie is a little file that typically a website will place on your computer. It's often there for your assistance, because when you use a website, you may make certain choices about what part of the world you're in, how, you know, what part of the website you're interested in, and it will remember those using a cookie. The problem is you get things called tracking cookies, which one website will write it, then the next website that you visit will say, oh, you were interested in this product, and you start seeing adverts for that product coming up on a website that you've maybe even never been to before, and it shows what you were looking for on Amazon, you know, yesterday.
Yeah, I've seen it happen.
Ago.
It's why every website I visit now attempts to sell me baby products. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Kay has given us a call in Fareham. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning.
What's your question, Kay?
Well, it's to do with my television, actually. I wondered if Fevzi could help me with that.
Hope so, Kay.
Hello there.
Hello.
My partner bought this television, I think it was about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. It's got built-in Freeview.
Yeah.
But these days, the signal's very bad. It pixelates on most of the channels, even BBC One and Two.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I can't even get those channels. BBC One and Two disappears completely. I doubt if I could get more than about 10 channels with a reasonable reception.
Right. And
I don't know where to go to get it sorted.
Yeah, no, I understand. Have you tried rescanning all the channels, because channels on Freeview have moved around over time, and sometimes you may still pick something up, but it may no longer be the strongest version of that channel. So it's worth just setting it up as if it was new again, and allowing it to scan from the beginning all the Freeview TV and indeed radio stations available. Let it scan all the way through. So that's one thing to do. The other thing is, what sort of aerial have you got?
Well, it's upstairs in the loft.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good news.
And I've not been up there for a long time. I can't get up there. Unfortunately, I'm on crutches. So
I understand. Well, you know, do you have access to another television set within the house? Do you have, for example, a portable set?
No, I've only got the one.
Okay. So what's not clear to me is
probably get my brother could probably bring a portable around, I should think.
I'm sorry, I interrupt you, Kate. Go ahead, please.
No, sorry. I was going to say I probably could get someone to bring a portable round if that was to help the situation. But
well, what that would tell us is if you brought in another TV set, connected it to the same aerial as the one that's currently connected, and it were to behave well, then we know that the problem is with the TV set. If, however, another TV set has similar problems, then it could be that the aerial is either faulty, or that because of changes in transmissions around the area, that you need a better aerial or a better fitted aerial. Aerials do sometimes degrade, connections sometimes degrade. Have you got, you haven't got multiple TVs, so you're not in a situation where you're amplifying the signal and splitting it around the house or anything like that?
No. Aerial has been there, well, I've been here 30 odd years, so
yeah. Well, it's also possible that you get something like, you know, what's called a dry joint somewhere along the way, and that the signal becomes impaired. And I think that connecting another TV will be a good test for that. But my first suggestion would be, before you start trying to borrow TV sets, is just rescan from the beginning.
So how do I do that?
Well, the detail of it differs from TV to TV, but essentially you go into
Panasonic, actually.
Right. I mean, essentially you go into a menu. You typically have a button marked menu or something similar on the remote control, and in that there will be settings that may be called setup or retune or scan. And it will say, sometimes they'll say analog scan or digital scan. You go for the digital scan. That's the Freeview side of things, because we don't pick up TV on analog signals anymore. It's all digital now.
Yeah, I think I've tried that, actually.
Yeah. The other possibility is, do you find that sometimes you're watching a channel and it's fine, and then it drops out for a few seconds and comes back again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it comes up, no signal.
But then it recovers.
Yes.
Okay. That can be when the government sold off frequencies to mobile phone companies for the 4G service, which is this sort of high-speed wireless internet service. Some of the 4G frequencies that they sold off were far too close to the Freeview frequency, and therefore it's possible that what you're also getting is a signal surge from a 4G tower somewhere that's just blanking you out for a few seconds. If that's the case, you can actually get filters that you fit between the aerial and the TV set, just a little box that filters out those spikes, and they are available free of charge in a lot of cases. I'm just trying to remember. I think it was called 8800 or something. AT and then number 800.tv. I think I'm just going to try and check this now. You can actually just go there and there we are. It's letter A, letter T, number 8, number 0, number 0 .tv. If you can have
AT 800.tv.
Yeah. Yeah, so
okay.
It's at, as in AT, and then the number 800 in numerics, and then .tv. And
okay,
that takes you to a service for people who are, it says, at 8800, our role is simple to make sure you can still watch Freeview when 4G service arrives in your area. So
okay. That's
a possible culprit, because that sort of dropping out and coming back again after a second or two is it doesn't necessarily mean it's that, but it's a classic way in which 4G pulses over the top of Freeview. And they'll send you we did this in my home, and they sent they'll send you one for each TV that you have.
Okay.
So that I think that's also something you can try. So try retuning. If that doesn't work, you can speak to these people on the phone as well. They have a contact number on the website as well, which they're pretty good and pretty helpful. And I see here that they're open Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And there's a free phone number.
You go. Okay. Well, good luck with that. Just give us that address one more time, first. It's AT800.tv. Is that right?
Yeah. Can I give the free phone number? It's off their website.
Go right ahead. Go on.
It's 0808 1313 800. That's 0808 1313 800.
While we're on the subject of respelling things, Bill in Belfast, been in touch. C Cleaner, we were talking about earlier. Just to clarify the way that is spelt, it's C, the letter C, isn't it? As in C for Colin, and then Cleaner.
Yes.
So C C L E A P-I-R-I-N-E-R. Yeah. That's what you need to search for.
Yeah, and you can go to the Piriform website, P for Papa, I-R-I, F for Foxtrot, O-R-M for Mother.
There you go. That's the one. Let's go to Jack in Brighton. Good morning, Jack.
Hello there.
What's your question, sir?
My question is about recovering some photos off a micro SD card. Mm-hmm. I think I might have spoken to Fevzy quite a while back, maybe 6 months ago, and I think he might have suggested, you know, trying to use the Recover software.
Yep, that sounds like me. Yep.
Yeah. And I did try some things then, and the basic problem I found was that when I put that card into, you know, the adapters or whatever, it's not recognised. It's not seen as formatted. Yeah, so I couldn't access the card, and I've just put it on hold. Basically, I just put the card to the side to, you know, look into in the future if I could. And I had an idea recently. If I actually formatted that card, would it allow me to? Because I think, would it allow me to access the card to try and run that Recover software again?
It may do. Just remind me, first of all, what led up to this problem? What was happening when it first went wrong?
Yeah, the card was in the phone, but mm-hmm. the phone was running out of power. And I can't remember. I don't know where. I just kept powering it on and off, and I think it just happened over a number of times that I powered the phone on and off. And then, you know, after all that, when I got the phone going or charged up or whatever,
it's corrupted the file system.
And it couldn't access the photos, and it's not seen as format. It's just, you know, the phone wants to format it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah.
And therefore, when you try and run Recover or something similar, it's just not able to deal with it. It's a good thought that you have. It may work, but what you have to understand about formatting is that the way that any sort of memory device, be it a floppy disk or a hard drive or an SSD or indeed a memory card, the way that they are formatted is that formatting is the placing of bits of data, you know, formatting bits at regular in spaces across the device. Now,
right.
It's true to say that it may be that you can then recover any data from between those bits, but it's also quite possible that by formatting it, you will destroy or overwrite critical parts of the data, and that the more you write to that disk in any form, the more likely you are to render it irrecoverable.
I thought that also that some formatting is, you know, like on I think computers, you do a quick format, so it doesn't do a complete wiping format of the whole disk. It just does a basic format, that might allow me to access.
Yeah, it's true, because what it's doing there is just rewriting what's called the file access table.
Yeah.
So you can do, but I would, my suggestion, I mean, how valuable is the data on there? What's on there?
Well, it's just photos. It's photos, you know, over probably 6 months or a year. So it's, you know.
It's enough.
I prefer to get them back, but, yeah, I mean.
Okay. I would try some other software applications and see if you get anywhere first, because I think formatting it should be a last resort. And by the way, there are also companies that do data recovery of all sorts of devices.
I think they probably charge quite a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But do you know, can this other software access a card that is seen as unformatted as such? Do you know
some of them can, because some of them will try and do a bit copy, which doesn't rely upon the operating system at all. What some of them are able to do is just go in, and as long as the device is actually working, they do a bit by bit copy.
You recommend one particular?
Well,
I've got is the SanDisk card.
Yeah,
and when I looked at the website,
Yeah.
They had a particular software they recommended.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a free download with a lot of their cards as well. Did you try that one?
I haven't tried that one yet.
Well,
I think
I would. I mean, the good thing about these recovery softwares is that they tend to be passive. They don't tend to try and write anything to the disk. I mean, if they're going to try and do a repair, they will warn you first. So, and SanDisk is a reputable company, and they've been shipping recovery software, you know, as a download with their cards for a long time.
I think they've got a free one and a professional one that you can pay for, which I don't know.
It's often the way. So I would try that one by all means.
Okay.
There's another one called Get Data Back, or one word. That one's worth trying. And again, there's a free version which doesn't actually recover any data, but what it does is it scans a drive or a card and it tells you what it thinks it can recover, and then you if it's worthwhile to you, then you pay, which is nice because you don't have the situation where you pay.
Well, is that the Get Data Back one? Is that one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Data Back. And there's one that I don't know if it will work, but I mentioned earlier in the show, and I have no affiliation to him, but a lot of respect, this chap in the States called Steve Gibson, who runs GRC, Gibson Research Corporation. It's a one-man thing, but he's a very, very bright guy. He's the author of a piece of software called SpinWrite, which I think is SpinWrite. Now, that is a piece of recovery software which was originally designed to work with spinning hard drives, hence the word SpinWrite, and it would recondition and recover data off drives that were held to be dead by almost any other bit of software. I know that that also works on SSD drives. There is a possibility, and I've never tried this, but you could look on the site and just research it a little bit, but it's a possibility it may work with other solid state devices such as memory cards. And I think it's worth looking at that because the reputation of SpinWrite is excellent. Okay. And it really does work at the low level, and that one certainly doesn't rely upon formatting or a particular operating system. It just sees a drive as a device with a string of bits on it and nothing else.
Okay.
Thank you, Jack. Really appreciate giving us a call this morning. 0500 909 693. Still got a few minutes if you want to get a question into Fevsi. Let's turn to some texts that have come in on 85058. Chris says, morning, what would be a good starter gaming PC? Many thanks. It's a tricky question, isn't it? Depends
what
you want to play, I suppose.
And it's always, it's almost an oxymoron, because gaming PC, and by that we tend to talk about PCs that are able to run pretty much the latest games. And I'm not talking about, you know, simple tic-tac-toe or something.
Like Minesweeper on Windows
95. Yeah, no, nothing like that. And yeah, exactly. We're talking about things that will render complicated images in three dimensions and in high definition. Now, a good gaming PC is extremely expensive. The graphics card in a really good gaming PC is more expensive than the average PC. You will spend several hundred pounds on a good on a good graphics card. So this is quite a specialist area, and I think it's not a good idea for me to say, oh, you should, you know, get this spec and so forth. I'll give you some general advice that will maybe help you choose. It is important to have a good processor, but actually the processor is not the key to this. So an i5 or an i7 processor from Intel will certainly suit you fine. More of the money should be put into the graphics card. You should understand what resolution and what frame rate it's capable of at that resolution, because for the fluidity of a game, it depends upon it being able to render that image so many times per second. Any delays in that not only lead to a sort of, can lead to a jerky image, but can lead to you losing a game. If you're playing an online game and your machine's not as responsive as that, so your competitors, you can lose out.
That's what I blame when it
absolutely. And also the 4G signal, I blame that as well.
But the 4G
also
signal.
Make sure that you've got a good amount of RAM in it. So I would say 8 gigabytes or more, and an SSD based system, at least for the boot drive. So the boot drive is a drive where the operating system sits, so when it starts up, it reads from that. If you can afford an SSD for everything, that's great. If you can't, then you get a smaller SSD drive as your boot drive, and then a large conventional drive to hold the the non speed critical files. So that's what I would be looking at. Think about your screen as well. Think about the sound card. Just try and understand. And one good thing to do is actually look at some of the games that you want to play, either if it comes with a box or as a download from a website, and look at what the requirements are. They normally will say minimum requirements, but then there'll be a more realistic, optimal.
Recommended setting, as opposed to minimum or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Precisely. And it's worth, going for that, and go for the best that you can afford, because if you buy something that's just good enough this year, by next year it will struggle, and you'll be trying. And by
the way, although having said that, first, there is a you used to always say, I've been a PC gamer for years, and there was always a sort of, you've got to upgrade every year. It almost seems like the power of the hardware was, we got to a stage where it was sort of surpassing the need to sort of upgrade. I've run a machine with a GTX 680 in for about the last 3 years now, and it still ticks over quite nicely.
Yeah, and we're up to 1080s
now. Yeah,
it's
brand new, isn't it? I wonder if that's something to bear in mind, is that Nvidia have just released, haven't they, a new tranche of high-end graphics cards. So is it worth hanging on for a month or two to see if the prices drop on the new cards, and indeed the values of the older cards come down, because they're
The thing is, that's a process that's always in train, and you can always make that argument to wait for the next one, or for the one that you want to drop in price. I think the trick is just to make sure you get something that will do what you want today and got some headroom, some extra oomph to it as well. Beyond that, just find a word of warning. Just be aware, this is a very addictive thing. A lot of people, it can break up families, because all your money starts going on, it's like people who are obsessed by their cars and are constantly upgrading their car and spending money on it instead of taking
There's a sort of arms race thing that goes on, isn't it? There's a bit of
yes, and people do blame their hardware as well. So, they do try and, if I'd have had that new card, that wouldn't have happened, or the experience would have been much more immersive. One thing I will also say to you, and it's a new requirement at the moment, is if you think you will be doing any VR gaming, virtual reality gaming, then that's a whole different level of requirement for the machine as well, and it won't be cheap at the moment.
No.
Machines that run VR well are expensive. You're talking about over £1,000.
Yes, that's why, having recently had a baby, I may have to duck out of the PC gaming arms race. I have to say, the launch of the new cards has tempted me. But,
or sell the baby and get a really good game.
It's a good job my wife is almost certainly not listening, unless the baby has woken her up, which is the slight.
Well, I'm not suggesting you don't share it, for goodness sake. I mean, you get a good price, you can
share it. VR is a very, very solo thing. It's difficult to share VR.
Tell them I'm not a marriage counsellor, right?
Fevzi, thanks very much. We've got 30 seconds left. Should we get a very, very quick one in?
Why not?
Let me see what I can do quickly. Just a quick word, yes or no, could you suggest a good file shredder for Android?
For Android? Not off the top of my head. I was about to say Killdisk when I thought it was going to be Windows.
I'm sorry.
I'll come back to you next time.
I'll put you on the spot. Well, you can always get hold of Fevzi at gadgetdetective.com. Fevzi Turkup, he has the patience of a saint, and his knowledge is vast. Fevzi, thank you so much for joining us on the Tech Phone-In.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.